Everlasting Light by Victoria Mackenzie, read by Anne Lacey. When I imagined my final day at school before retirement, I allowed myself to imagine a day suffused with warmth and affection. My colleagues would touch my arm and say how much they'd enjoyed working with me, how much they'd miss me. The girls would be more attentive, more respectful than usual, and one of the sixth formers would present me with a beautiful bouquet of flowers during end-of-term assembly. She might even be a bit teary as she handed it over and wished me a happy retirement. But as I locked my car and walked towards the basement staff entrance for the final time, I felt a small shiver of foreboding. I entered the staff room and glanced around. As usual, hardly anyone even looked up from their phones. Mr. Gray, the eager new geography teacher, was standing by the kettle waiting for it to boil. He was looking out of the window, though there was little to see except a brick wall a few feet away. He turned and took a jar of Nescafe out of the cupboard. "Last day, Jane," he said when he saw me. "Lucky you." I began to reply, but he was already calling over to Mrs. Weston to see if she wanted another coffee, and my words got lost beneath his. It's not that I had anything much of interest to say, just something about wishing to be his age again and having it all in front of me. Although that wasn't even true. I sometimes felt as if I only ever spoke in platitudes at school now, as if I'd lost the habit of putting my real thoughts into words and speaking them aloud. Instead, these other easy phrases came out, cliches, inanities. Nearly Friday, not another Monday morning, it is what it is. The words had become a kind of shell, a protection to hide behind. And what was I actually thinking at that moment? I was looking around the staff room, bidding it a mental farewell. In the 40 years I'd been teaching at the school, it had had a couple of licks of paint and one new carpet, but otherwise it was unchanged. Pigeon holes on the far wall, although email meant they weren't used much now. The kitchenette with its kettle, toaster, microwave. Uncomfortable armchairs with scratchy synthetic covers. And then the staff. My esteemed colleagues. All checking emails, news feeds, social media accounts. Eyes glazed, bodies frozen. Scarcely looking up these days to offer a hello or how was your weekend. A sense of humiliation washed over me. A sudden surge of resentment towards every person in this room. At one time or another, they'd all snubbed me, ignored me, talked over me, or simply not noticed I was there. No, I wouldn't want 40 years of this ahead of me. Thank you very much. "Coffee, Jane?" Mr. Gray was waggling the Nescafe jar at me. "What? Oh, no, thank you, Mr. Gray. I always bring..." My words were lost again, blanketed by laughter as two more colleagues entered the staff room. One of them was the head, Miss Kent, who wasn't even born when I started teaching here. I was going to say that I always brought my own drink. I had a battered but still serviceable William Morris flask, a present from my late husband, and every morning I brewed a large teapot of Darjeeling and decanted it into the flask, so I didn't need to wait on the staff room kettle or endure the terrible staff room tea bags that tasted of dust. I sat in one of the scratchy, uncomfortable armchairs. Miss Kent came over. She was one of those hearty women, keen on sport and being outdoors in all weathers. "Well, Jane, last day," she said. I wondered if everyone was going to say this to me today. "Whatever are you going to do with all that free time?" she asked. "Oh, a bit of gardening, I expect. Read some of the classics." As I spoke, she took out her phone and her expression glazed over almost immediately. "Yes," I thought. "Today was my last day. If I didn't want to, I didn't need to talk to her. Perhaps I didn't need to do anything I didn't want to today. I could stop playing at being Jane Smythe, the physics teacher who'd been here forever. I could stop making polite replies to my colleagues' inane questions, which was hardly even rude of me, considering they didn't actually care about the answers. Are you all right, Jane? Mr. Gray asked. You look a bit strange. Oh, I must feel very odd today. I looked at him, at his overgrown haircut, fringe in his eyes. It reminded me of my Hugo when we'd first met. I'd heard Mr. Gray had a wife and a baby at home. Must be very tiring, a baby. Probably not sleeping much. But what did I care? After today, I wouldn't see him again. I turned and walked out of the staff room. I had two classes today, but as it was the last day of term, no one was expecting proper lessons. At noon, there would be end-of-term assembly, and after that, I'd be as free as a bird. My classes passed without event. In the first one, we played games that demonstrated some of the ideas we'd studied that term. Elasticity, gravity, acceleration. The girls competed in teams to see who could keep a marble in the air longest using only sellotape, elastic bands and a newspaper. In the second class, we used lasers of different colours, and I tried to impress the girls by telling them that light lasts forever. Some light waves have been travelling across the universe for billions of years. They're almost as old as the universe itself. Right now, I told them, the light leaving your face, your hands, your shoes is radiating out into space at an incredible speed, and it won't diminish unless it bumps into something or gets sucked into a black hole. They remained impassive as ever, refusing to show a spark of interest in anything other than their appearance or their mobile phones. As final assembly approached, I felt a few butterflies in my stomach. I hadn't planned much of a speech, just a few pearls of wisdom I wanted to share. We filed into the main hall and I took my usual seat at the side. Miss Kent was on stage at the lectern, leading proceedings. There were endless announcements, three hymns. A first-year pupil read a poem and the clock sped on towards 1 o'clock. I started to wonder if there would be any acknowledgement of my retirement at all. Then, with 5 minutes to go, Miss Kent cleared her throat and began. And of course, today's a very special and a very sad day for the school, as we say goodbye to Mrs. Smythe. She smiled at me and indicated that I should join her on the stage. I stood up, found my heart was thudding. I began to climb the portable wooden steps to get onto the stage. Miss Kent came forward, and I thought she was putting out her hand to help me, but then she took it away again, and at that moment I lost my balance and went crashing down the steps. I heard 650 people gasp. I heard sniggering and even outright laughter. I lay on my back like an upended tortoise, gazing up at the light fittings and fixtures. It looked strange from this new perspective. Someone helped me up and led me out of the hall. It was Mr. Gray. He took my arm and we walked slowly together to the staff room. He was all kindness and solicitation, but I could hardly bear to look him in the eye. And that was my moment gone. No bouquet of flowers from a teary-eyed pupil. No chance to give my speech and say goodbye. What a shame, commiserated Mr. Gray as he helped me onto a chair. On your last day and all. Worse things happen at sea, Mr. Gray, I said, rubbing my elbow. I flexed my leg and, my left knee burned. I heard the 1 o'clock bell ring and I knew that the main hall would be emptying. My colleagues would soon be here in the staff room, gathering their belongings, emptying their pigeonholes, saying goodbye to one another, and 6 weeks of summer holidays began. Can I give you a lift home? Mr. Gray asked. I'm just round the corner from you. Thank you, but I'm perfectly all right to drive. I hurried out of the school as fast as my aching knee would allow. A summer shower started to fall, drenching my blouse. As I got into my car, I could feel a sob rising in my chest. I'd wanted a happy memory from today, something to savour, to hold up to the light like a good wine. Instead, I'd laddered my tights, scuffed my court shoes, and made myself a laughingstock. No, this was self-pity getting the better of me. I gave myself a little shake and gripped the steering wheel. Worse things happen at sea, I told myself again. Hugo always said this whenever there was a calamity, large or small. A broken plate, a lost cat, the inability to have children, a terminal cancer diagnosis. Worse things happen at sea. But do they? I wondered. What is it that happens at sea that's so much worse than the things that had happened to us? I drove to the cemetery. Hugo died 20 years ago, but I still visited most weeks. The rain had stopped, and everything sparkled in the July sunshine. My blouse was drying quickly, and I laid an old rug on the damp grass. I had some tea left in my flask, so I poured it out and sat down to talk to Hugo. His being dead had never stopped our chats. "Well, old girl, how was your last day?" he asked. "Rotten," I said. And I told him all about the fall, my humiliation, my scuffed shoes and sore knee and elbow. "Oh, my darling, but you're free now." "But all I want is to see your precious face again," I said. That's when I realised. If light lasts forever, then the light from Hugo's face is still out there somewhere, radiating off into the universe. His face the day I met him. His face on our wedding day. His face before he became ill. If I could travel fast enough, I could see him again. If you thought about it like that, perhaps it was almost possible to see anything again. I drove home, and as I turned into the driveway, I saw an unfamiliar car. Mr. Gray was standing beside it, holding an enormous bunch of roses and lilies. "Jane, you left without your flowers," he said. "I've got a car full of gifts and cards, too." He gave a boyish grin so like my Hugo that for a moment it was as if I really was seeing his face again. "Thank you, Mr. Gray," I said. "Bring them in and I'll make you a decent cup of tea." But at that moment his phone rang and he either didn't hear my invitation or didn't want to. He hurriedly put the bags and cards on my damp porch and waved as he drove off. I didn't care. I really was free now. I carried the glowing flowers indoors, their light streaming away into the universe.